I hand unto you what I myself have received. Longer than I want to say, I worked with a youth group, and I gave them all T-shirts with that saying on it. I hand on to you what I myself have received. It was in preparation for doing a play called Fiddler on the Roof because of the tradition song, but I stole it from St. Paul. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and in chapter 15, Paul says, I hand on to you what I have received. I thought of all this as I read the readings for today and thought about what this feast is talking about. The feast really has two parts. The first part is obvious. Jesus appears to the disciples. He gives them last-minute orders, and then he vanishes from their sight. And as we say theologically, we say he sits at the right hand of the Father. That's a metaphor. We mean he's one with God. Okay. But I don't want to get into that because I have no idea what that means other than that Jesus is exalted. The one who humbled himself is exalted. And then I thought, what is the gospel saying beside that? It's saying, I want you to give witness to everything you've experienced. I want you to, as the gospel says, testify to the whole world what has happened and who is with you. And I thought about that, and I thought, you know what? Faith is handed on one generation to the other. It's interpersonal. It's really why you're all here is somebody else touched your life. Your parents or grandparents or somebody who was a great teacher, whatever, they touched your life in such a way that you said, this means something to me. And you've done the same for others just by the way you lived. And that's so important for us to have a sense of what that means. It doesn't mean, and I'm part of a Zoom group. In fact, some of them are here today. And it's scripture. I don't know anything about Zoom. But anyway, it's this whole sense of reflecting on the readings. One of the people in there, and then some of them wrote in the same thing. Remember the Baltimore Catechism? When you had to learn what the church teaches? I still remember when I was in second grade trying to memorize the phrase, a sacrament is an outward sign instituted by Christ to give grace. I had no idea what that meant. But I remember memorizing it. And then I thought about that, and I said, well, it's important to know what the church teaches. It's important for us to have a sense of what we believe. But that's not enough, is it? In fact, if we just get caught within the boundaries of the catechism, we've lost what it means to be a disciple. It's really how we live. And how we live with each other, how we witness to the experience of God's presence in life. That's really what we do. You see, that's what the disciples were sent to do. They were sent to witness to their own experience of God in Jesus, and by doing it, draw others into the experience. And that's what we do. That's what we're called to do. And I wanted to think about concretizing that a little bit. And I thought of a couple of stories. And, you know, I have to have a story. And the one I was thinking of is, the first one that came to mind was from Father Greg Boyle. And if you haven't read any of his books, read one of them at least. Tattoos on the Heart is the first, and it's great. But what he does is he works with people who are in gangs in California, in L.A., and he does it in a very unique way. He draws them into community. He draws them into a community he calls a community of cherished belonging, where they're honored, where they're cared for, where they're treated with extravagant tenderness. I'd like to stay in a place like that, wouldn't you? You see what I mean? See what that does for you? See, that draws you in, and you say, oh, this is what it means to be church. That's what the community should be, a community of extravagant tenderness. That's how we give witness to Christ, because in there we can experience the presence of God. Anyway, he tells this story. He says there's a guy named Puppet. I'm sure he put these names in there because they're not the original names of these people. Maybe they are. Maybe it's a gang name. But anyway, they called him Puppet. And he finally got through their program, which is 18 months, and he really wanted to get a job. So he says, well, there's a job opening in our silkscreen, Homeboy Industries silkscreen. So they silkscreen T-shirts and stuff, you know. And so he said, oh, great. So when he goes there, he's got to meet people. And he's meeting the guys that he's going to work with, and they're all ex-gang members from other gangs, not his. So he's got to shake hands with all these guys, and he does it. He's fine. Then he comes to the last guy, a guy called Youngster, and they look at each other, and Father Boyle realizes there's been something between them that's very personal, and they won't shake hands. And so Father Boyle pulls this guy, Puppet, aside and says, if you can't work here with these people, I got plenty of other guys that are looking for this job. And so he said, okay. So they worked together. About 6 months later, Youngster goes after work to a store that's a few blocks away from where he lives. And he takes a shortcut through an alley. And he's accosted by 10 gang members from a foreign gang, and they beat him and kick him and leave him half dead. And when they finally get him to the hospital, Father Boyle is called. He was out giving a talk in St. Louis. And so he comes back and he says, I've never seen anybody who was so beaten. His head was about three times the size that it should be. And he knew that he was probably brain dead. And in the law in California is that you have to have at least two tests to see if you're neurologically dead or not before they can turn off the machine. We do the same thing here. And so you say, okay. That night, he gets a call from Puppet. And Puppet says, it's mixed up. What happened to Youngster? Can I do anything? Can I give him my blood? And he explains to him that he's past that point. And then he says to Father Boyle, he was my friend. We worked together. That is church. That is community. Father Boyle continues his talk and he says, is that always happen? He says, yes. Any exceptions? No. That's what a community of cherished belonging does for one another. I gave this, see, I live with my sister and brother-in-law, so they have to test out the homily. I don't think they like that, but they do. And I gave the talk to my sister yesterday, and she said, you know, she's worried about, she's got two boys, and they're not really going to church much. You probably have children like that too, some of you, right? And you worry about them. Let me give you a little story. I thought of this as I was talking to her. Years and years ago, my first parish, there was a woman who used to come to morning mass often. And she came up to me after one of the masses and she said, I'm worried about my one daughter. She had three daughters and she was worried about one of them. And she said, I don't know what's going to happen to her. I sent her to the Catholic grade school. I sent her to the Catholic high school. and she goes and meets a guy that she's working with and wants nothing to do with the Catholic Church. And she was worried that she was lost. I said, I don't think so. Well, what are you going to say? This lady had cancer. She was diagnosed with lung cancer. Eventually, it metastasized to her brain. And this is about 2 years later. She's dying. And I was called, and I went to the hospital, and I was standing at the door of the room. And the woman was crying. She was in such pain and such agony. She was just crying out. So I went to the nurse's station, and I said, can you do anything for her? Well, this was the 70s. And in the 70s, they were afraid that you couldn't give too much to somebody. They maybe die, or they get addicted, rather. Of course, she was like 2 days from dying. So I didn't think she was going to be addicted. But, you know, the nurse can't just do that. She's got to call the doctor and all this stuff. And so I was walking back, and as I walked back, I'm standing at the door of the room. And this daughter, who she was so worried about, was kneeling on the floor next to her bed, cradling her head, cradling her mother's head in her arms, and stroking her bald head, and singing, "Peace is flowing like a river." And as she was singing, her daughter was at peace. And I thought to myself as I saw it, she's no longer worried about her daughter. She knows, she believes, she knows that she knows how to be a person of compassion and care. And she knows something, I think, that we all have to know. The gospel says, I will be with you until the end of time. What does that mean? It means that the love of God surrounds us and embodies a whole new way of living. So we don't. It doesn't just depend on how we witness. It really depends that the presence of God is there with and for one another. Do you see what I mean? So it's not only a horizontal spreading of the gospel. It's always the vertical. It's always God's presence. He's always there with us and sustaining us in ways that we can't even imagine. As I was thinking about how to end this, I had six different endings. I won't give you all of them. But one of the things I thought of is, in Ephesians chapter 2, Paul says, we are a building built on the foundation of Christ and the apostles. And it reminded me, as I thought of that passage, of a metaphor that one of my professors in Boston taught me years ago. He was a Dutchman. Franz Josef von Beck, his name was. He talked with a big, thick accent, but he's a wonderful teacher. And he said when he was young, he went on a cruise along the Rhine River, and he saw these castle towers built right on the water's edge. And he wondered, how can they sustain it? How come they're not washed away by the power of the river? And then he took a tour of one of them. And he went down. And he said, as I continued to go down, I realized that the stones were so cut that they were resting on the bedrock with such precision. And it's almost impossible to tell the difference between the foundation, the bedrock, and those first stones. That's the point. We are all resting on the foundation of Christ and the prophets. And that gives us the ability to hand on the faith without being washed away by the currents of life. Another ending was, St. Francis says, at least it's attributed to him, proclaim the gospel always, and if necessary, use words.